Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Daddy Dailies. This is Vika, one of your Daddy Dailies hosts, and I'm hopping on to say that we recorded this episode with Corinne Evans prior to SAG moving to officially organize intimacy coordinators as part of their union. So the information that we talk about is educational and it's relevant, but we've also gone ahead and linked some more recent resources in the show notes and have even more on the Patreon so that you can stay informed as things develop. Without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with the amazing Corinne Evans.
But daddy is a state of mind, you know what I'm saying? I'm your daddy.
I can be smart when it's important.
I'm your daddy. I'm
sorry to this.
I'm your daddy.
Daddy Dailies, hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films.
Welcome back to Daddy Dailies. I am Carly.
And I'm Vika.
And we are two of the founders of Not Your Daddy's Films.
I would love to introduce you to our guest today. She is an accomplished director, writer, and intimacy coordinator who has kept our actors safe in the most vulnerable scenes in TV shows and movies, like the hugely popular After series, Dix the Musical, American Horror Story, and the upcoming Maxine, directed by Ty West. And starring Mia Goth. We are so excited to welcome Corinne Evans to Daddy Dailies.
Hello.
Welcome. So you are so accomplished in so many different ways. You're also an actor.
Sort of.
From time to time.
She dabbles.
You know, she helped us today with the sound setup. This is a real grassroots operation.
I'm ready.
She's multi-hyphenate city over here.
Boots always on the ground. But let's start at the very beginning for you. Did you always want to work in film and TV? Did you know what those jobs were? How did you find yourself here in LA?
Yeah, I think storytelling was always incredibly important for me. So I think before I even knew that I wanted to be a film director, which my mother has reiterated to me that started around like age 8 or 9.
Oh,
I think
wow.
Is like when I became aware of it. I guess I had like a sign on my door that said residence of future film director.
Stop. Wow.
Which is so cute. I don't remember having that. But yeah, story was just always incredibly important to me. My sisters and I were a performing group starting when I was around 12. We were a acapella group and we would do like shows that had skit components as well as like acapella singing, and we would do like corporate events and travel around.
Wow. Wait, how many sisters?
Two, but we performed with another set of sisters, so there was five of us.
Have you written about this?
The Broadway Babes. I did write a mockumentary with my old writing
brain. I did not know this.
We didn't make it, but we wrote it, yeah.
Me and my siblings did something similar.
Did you?
Like, I can't even lie to you, but we would do old folks' homes.
Oh, yeah,
my,
we did that as well.
Great aunt and great kooky great aunt and uncle. I hope they're not watching this.
That is so fun because I feel like people are ready to like get really into the show, like in those spaces.
Yes.
Yeah, so we did like corporate, like we would get hired for like corporate events and stuff. But to go back to your question, it's like there was story. There was always story there. Like I was always like wanting to put together a narrative through line for like our sets, and then I would write plays that my school would put on, and my mom and I wrote like a play that the church that I grew up in put on. Ooh. So their story was always at the forefront of everything I was interested in. And then my parents got me like a JVC mini DV handycam. And then I started making like films around like 9, 10. And I actually just pulled that mini DV camera out the other day and like shot a friend's DJ set just to see if like it still worked. And we converted the tape. There was like a sync issue, but it did work.
That's awesome.
So I did kind of always know that I wanted to work in narrative storytelling in some capacity. And then I figured out that like film was a thing. I had many different potential careers that I wanted to have when I was younger, but I always sort of had my eye on storytelling and film in some capacity. And then I booked a movie when I was 17, I believe, in Washington. And the production was I'm from Washington. The production was an LA production that was shooting in Washington State. Most of the actors were from Los Angeles and the crew was from Los Angeles. That movie is called Cement Suitcase.
Cool title.
And
well, it seems like it could have been the name of your L sister band.
Yeah, absolutely.
Truly.
It's a band name.
Truly. Oh my God, bang names. And so once I did that, I acted in that and I was like, okay, I guess I could do this. And I knew I wanted to direct, but I had sort of a glass ceiling that was maybe a smart glass ceiling to build around myself of like, okay, nobody's going to let like an 18-year-old girl direct a movie with like that costs money and all these things. So I should go try to act and try to get in that way. And then I'll be able to be on set and learning. I had asked the crew, like, do you think I should go to film school? And they were like, no. And I was like, okay. They're like, it's good for like lots of, I have nothing against film school. I just didn't go. And they were like, I don't think you need it. So I was like, okay, I'll just go and try to start working, which is what I did. And so I moved out to LA and then was pursuing acting for a time.
Do you remember having a good experience with the director on that first movie?
Oh my God. It was amazing. His name is Rick Castaneda. And he was awesome and the crew was awesome and everyone got along. And I had a like fake news experience on that set because it was like,
because not always does everyone get along, unfortunately. No. Although we would love that to be the case all the time.
It would be amazing. I've had a couple like really good on set experiences, like where a movie was just sort of like a beautiful, like golden hour, like happy experience. But yeah, as we know, like that's not usually the case. But this crew just like, to me as like the outsider coming in, it seemed like such a family and they were having such a great time. And I was like, oh my God, this is heaven. Mm. And they were like, just so you know, it's not usually this.
So is someone there to burst your little 18-year-old bubble?
Yeah, and like, just so you know, it is kind of gnarly. And I was like, well, I still want to do it. And and then I basically dropped out of high school. And I did finish high school, but I finished online. But I've always been an experiential learner. It's always been really hard for me, like academia or any like learning that you're supposed to do in a certain way has always been really hard for me. If I don't understand why I'm doing something, it's really hard for me to retain that information. Mm-hmm. So coming out and just like making a bunch of mistakes and doing things like, and getting my hands dirty was the best way for me to like learn. So I'm glad I did it the way I did. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for other people, but that's what I did.
Yeah, so cool. I mean, it's just good to know, like, for anybody listening that, like, if you're a creative thinker, that normal route isn't always the way. We're going to get back to your writing and directing in a little bit as well, but we wanted to start with how did you go from there to intimacy coordinating?
Okay, so my journey into intimacy work was driven by monetary needs. Mm. So I'll just be completely honest. Like, I've always been drawn to intimacy on screen. I've always been drawn to depictions of eroticism in any capacity. Like, I was born with, like, a deep interest in sex. For me, it was driven first and foremost by, I was like, I need a new career path. I had a business for a while creating actor demo reels with my old writing partner, Maddie McGuire. Hmm. And we did that for a time. So we would write them, shoot them, cut them, the whole shebang. She was moving on with her career and life and moving to Florida. We were shutting down our business. And I was working at a bar. And I was sort of just like, I need like a new job that could sustain me. I would like something where I can be expanded and be around other filmmakers, continue to be on set, continue to grow my skill set. Mm-hmm. And then I got cast in a TV show, Jet, and I was going out to do, I ended up doing, thanks. I was doing two episodes on that show and I was doing like a intimacy scene. Yeah. I had like a three girls sex scene that I was in.
Were you nervous about the prospect of doing that?
No.
And you are very comfortable with intimacy.
Yes, I've been a performer in these spaces, not XXX, but I perform with a group called Sweven. We do erotic performance art. And so it's not XXX, but it is very sexy. There's sometimes nudity and it's a lot of negotiation of a lot of what I do as a coordinator. Mm. We do during that show because it's an improvisational show. So we're starting with like the founder Dawn. She will give us like parameters of like, okay, this is the scene, these are your props, this is who you're doing the scene with, this is what I want to, you know, let's say it's a Marie Antoinette scene, it's going to turn into a cake fight, sexually, like feeding each other cake, like you guys can kiss, you can do this, you can do that. And so we then, as the performers, like, talk to each other, like, what are you comfortable with, you know? Where do you want to take this, and come up with parameters that we work within. So as a performer in that show, I do like lots of different things. So I sort of wasn't, doing intimacy on screen was never something that made me nervous. Mm. My nervousness around intimacy on screen comes more from other people's like ideas around what it means to be a woman and being naked on screen, and then what that says about you in our puritanical culture. But that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, so I did this episode, and they had a coordinator. This was a really long time ago. This was like beginning of intimacy coordination. And there wasn't...
This is like, what year was it?
2017 or 2016, okay, yeah. Maybe. Wow. 2017. And I spoke with the coordinator after and was kind of like, I kind of want to get into this. And she was like, they're like...
There isn't really a set way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time, there was not that many people doing it. So I was able to find a workshop through IDC, which was at the time called IDI. Intimacy Directors and Coordinators. I found a workshop through them, and then they were called Intimacy Directors International, I think, at the time. And so they weren't even, it was a lot of like theater training, I think, if I remember correctly. It wasn't even like what I was looking to do. And then I, the story is long, so I'm going to try to just shorten it of how I got into it.
Don't worry. Okay.
For me at the time, there just wasn't that much available for like getting into it. And I was just really curious about my own experiential knowledge with, as a director, as an actor, and as a performer in these spaces where I'm continuously like dealing with choreography and consent negotiation for myself as a performer, and also sometimes for others in those performance spaces as well. So I was able to find some different workshops, and then I started experimenting with my own methods, doing short films and doing smaller projects. And then I found theatrical intimacy education, and I took like a bunch of workshops from them. Simultaneously, that was like around the time that I got American Horror Stories and started working like on a larger scale.
And sorry, just to pause for a quick sec. Those workshops, are they kind of teaching you how to speak about these things in a way that will make people feel more comfortable?
It's a lot of different things. So like the workshops go through, depending on where you would take them, right? Because like I sort of cherry picked and took workshops from lots of different organizations. There's organizations that offer like comprehensive training that's like going through one full organization. That wasn't really I guess it was kind of an option with IDC when I started out, but it wasn't really a thing the way that it is now. Because now there's like all these companies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And were they super, I mean, you don't have to say numbers, but like, were they expensive? Like, how accessible was
it? Not accessible at all, in fact. And I won't name names, but like, there was one that I really wanted to train with, and I was met with a response from that company saying, oh, we won't train anyone that wants to work in Los Angeles. And I was like,
what?
Okay, interesting. I'm just gonna go my own way, because I was just like, that feels not aligned. Since I think they've changed their ways, but like there was just organizations that I was kind of being met with, either there just wasn't anything, or like there was some resistance to even getting into that program. And the accessibility just wasn't there. And again, that's not to say that there's anything wrong with these programs. I think they're great, and like people are getting amazing training from them. So I think, similar to my experience with directing, it's experiential for me. I've always been someone that I'm going to bring years and years and years of like my directing, acting, all these things to my coordination work.
Yeah.
So there's obviously things that I wanted to do prior to getting on set. Like I took bystander intervention. I took mental health first aid. This was prior. SAG rolled out like a bunch of recommendations for intimacy coordinators after this. But I took a bunch of these things that I thought would help me in that space on set. And then with theatrical intimacy education, they offered more of like bite-sized workshops that addressed exact topics. So to circle back to your original question, it's like they offer one that's more of an overview. This is what it's like to be a coordinator. Here's best practices. Then they offered one that was choreography focused, modesty garment focused.
Interesting.
All these different focused and different focuses. We would go over like what was in the SAG contract in regards to intimacy and the guidelines, which are very like gray and confusing. And like there's actually not that many like really hard and fast rules when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. There's not as many as you would think that there are. But we went over that and like what is, you know, the actual role versus what is like maybe the best way to approach this.
Sure.
And it's an evolving field. It's a very rapidly evolving field. It's very new. Mm-hmm. So everything's changing at like lightning speed, right? Yeah. So a lot of it's, yeah, experiential, but also you can learn from other professionals and take these courses and stuff like that.
You'd been on set before, obviously, mm-hmm. but when you went to American Horror Stories, were you, did you feel confident that you could, you know, chime in and like understand your role on set with all these moving parts?
Yeah. Yeah. I had done a couple movies before being on Stories. And I did. I felt really confident. I think my biggest asset going into the space as a coordinator was coming from production. Mm-hmm. Like I had worked as a PA on like lots of big sets. I had worked up to be like a second on some non-union stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just understood the flow of a set. And I think for a lot of coordinators that I speak with, that seems to be like one of the hardest things to understand coming in.
For sure. Well, if you're not familiar with how a set works, it is this whole new ball game, you know? And it's not like people walk up to you and are like, hi, I'm in accounting and I do this over here. Like, it's just all these different departments working together, and you learn by doing.
Yep.
And so many orders of operations too. It's like, how do you know who to talk to?
That's the thing. And some of these, I think, like especially now with the training programs, I think they're going over that kind of stuff a lot. And theatrical intimacy education was really good for that. The founder of that company, or the co-founder of that company, is a good friend of mine. She now has a new company called Open Intimacy Creatives that's similar to theatrical intimacy education, that you can bite-size pick classes, but that one's more focused on like developing intimacy professionals, so like specifically people like in the field. Mm-hmm. Whereas TIE has like stuff for actors and directors as well. But I think now there's way more comprehensive, like, here's who to go to. Like, here's kind of like what the UPM does. Here's like what these other people do. Here's who to talk to.
Yeah.
I still, to be honest, because it varies. Even from going from like a TV set to like a smaller indie film, who you're talking to for what varies.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, who is your like one person above you? Like, mm-hmm. who you answer to? Is it some
great question? well, the producers, technically, I think, are my boss. But for me, like, most of my interaction happens with, like, producers, director, cast, 80s.
Yeah.
And then also wardrobe.
Yeah.
Maybe special effects if we're doing, mm-hmm. like, prosthetics and stuff. So, mm-hmm. and it could vary because, like, we could start getting into, like, now I'm talking to, you know, who's dressing the set because we're having an intimacy scene on like a set piece that we need to get some like cushioning for, or like it could vary depending on the scene, like who I'm talking to and like what.
So you kind of naturally led into my next question, which is that like American Horror Story and Maxine, like there's a intimacy within like the horror genre. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference in how you would approach that versus like the After series, which I haven't watched all of them, mm-hmm. but I, if you're not familiar, the After series are based on a very popular series of books, and I know like fans get really excited about seeing like the words come to life, and mm-hmm. I imagine that those books are pretty detailed when it comes to the erotic element. And I, you know,
I think for me as a coordinator, like I'm trying to think of like how to answer the question, because my process is the same, like mm-hmm. pretty much almost no matter what we're doing, because what I'm looking to do on any show is just like clarify.
Yeah.
I think with horror, you're introducing other elements that you know, like, are just things you don't think about in, like, regular intimacy scenes, because maybe, like, we're having, like, some crazy blood splatter. Right, like, we're doing, like, we're dealing with, like, different rigs, a blood rig that, like, maybe we're not going to be dealing with on, like, a just YA romance film. But, yeah, the process for me is just, like, clarification around what's happening, just getting that information to the people that are going to be doing that, people that are going to be in the space. It's I do feel like at the baseline, my job is just clarification. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to get that information as early as I can from the creative team, from the director, from the producers, and then, you know, running it by cast, running it by whoever else needs to know that information, and just making sure we're prepared.
Yeah.
So you're, are you doing anything, like, with the choreography of it all, or is that...
Depends on the film. It depends on the project. It depends on the director. Some projects, I'm choreographing most of what's happening. Some, I'm not. I'm just executing, assisting the director in executing, like, what they have in mind. I mean, I'm always assisting the director in executing what they have in mind. But sometimes they might be like,
what is no, the language not, yeah. for this, or I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, or they're like, well, I know I want them to be here in the scene. Do you have any ideas or have how to get them from A to B? And I might be like, oh, well, we could do this. We could have them do that. And I do make a lot of choreography suggestions, and sometimes they do ask me to choreograph.
That's fun.
You know, a lot of their intimacy. Yeah. Oh, it's what I got into intimacy coordinating to do. Like, it's what I thought I was going to be doing.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be like, okay, I'm, like, choreographing sex scenes, and I'm, like, creating, like, amazing intimacy moments on screen. But the reality is, like, yes, that's a part of the job, but a lot of the job is, like, dealing with the nudity writers, dealing with then legal, and, like, having those, like, being sort of a liaising between departments. And yeah, it's more of, it is very much a coordination role and less of, like, a well, I don't want to be like, it's not creative. It is. It's a very creative role.
How early do you join the process? Like, are you there for any of prep? And do you, like, what is your conversation like? I guess, I think what people really want to know is, like, are you asking actors, like, do you want, are you okay being touched here?
Yes. Yes. So, ideally, a production would bring me on early. Like, main writers have usually, like, obviously happened, like, the writer, the contract is the actor's contract. There's also a separate writer that is for simulated sex and nudity on screen. That writer sometimes is included in their first one, but sometimes it's done later. Ideally, I'm coming in before those happen. So with, like, lots of weeks up until shooting, productions do call me, like, week of, or, like, maybe they, like, especially if it's something more simple, like, oh, we have just a kiss scene, or, like, we have two people, you know, having intimacy, you know, post-coital scene, or, like, they're going to be getting out of bed. And in those instances, maybe they don't actually need that writer, but they're bringing me on a little later. If they need the writer and we're doing, like, full-blown, you know, intimacy scenes, I would hope the production would bring me on in prep, which is what usually happens. And then, yeah, I'm having that conversation with the director where I'm saying, you know, how do you see it? How dressed or undressed are they? Like, how do you see them interacting? What's the story? I always try to start with story. And what are they trying to convey tonally? Because that way, if we come up against any issues in with people, you know, not maybe not feeling comfortable with a certain action, there's so many ways to tell that story. There's And if I understand what the director wants to do, then I might, it's easier for me to say, well, we could still get that exact same tone and that exact same, you know, quote unquote sexiness that you're looking for, maybe with less nudity or less touch, and doing it in, like, here's three ideas that I have. So the earlier I can get on and the more I can understand the director's vision, the better I can problem solve. But yeah, usually I'm just finding out, like, the brass tacks is me finding out, like, what are we going to see? How are these people going to be interacting touch-wise? And then I have conversations with cast where we go over that, and we talk about, like, are you comfortable with this? Are you comfortable with that? And sometimes the director's like, I don't know. Can you just, like, ask them? I kind of think I want this type of a scene. Can you ask them what they want to do and what they're comfortable doing? And I try to not, I guess asking people what they want to do is not the approach that I'm taking. It's more like, where are your boundaries? Like, where are, what are the parameters we're working with within? And yeah, and then building from there.
I feel like I had such a great intimacy coordinator, like right before the strike on something. And she was just, she was like, look, my job is to make sure that you as an actor, like, feel comfortable every second. I'm going to be like, I'm here for you guys. The director is taking care of all of these people, but like, you talk to me about literally anything and then I'll take it where it needs to go. You know, just like, just really creating that sort of like safe bubble, mm-hmm. which I really appreciated because I had never really, I'd done a million things. I never had anything like that before. And also like a million things with blood and all of that. And it's just like, I think as an actor too, you're thrown into this like sort of sometimes cold environment that all of these moving parts have been going on for so much longer than you've been a part of it. Mm-hmm. So you're just kind of like, I'm here. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do stuff with this actor. Maybe that's like not as hot as you thought he would be. Or, you know, whatever. People's breaths smell. Like, it's weird. They're, it's, actors are just people.
I do be having those Listerine strips.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, somebody needs to be on that. Yeah. Truly. I mean, but like, that will change a situation.
Yeah, it's, it helps, like, if you can just try to remove as many barriers to comfort. I mean, comfort and safety, it's two words I think that get used a lot with the work that I do, mm-hmm. but the work is not comfortable. Like, I think we all know, like, being on a film set, it's uncomfortable. Like, we're working long hours. Doing intimacy work in general is not really comfortable. Mm. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing because I think, like, in the zeitgeist, it's, like, those two words. And even, like, wording in contracts, sometimes they'll, like, talk about, like, safety of the actors. And I'm like, well, safe, like, what does that mean? This is gonna get very existential, but
like mental safety,
yeah, like safety, yeah. Like, how do you create safety? Well, you can't, but you can mitigate risk.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
My job is mitigating risk.
Yes. Yeah.
And I cannot make someone feel comfortable or safe. I can't. I am also just a human, but I can mitigate as much risk as possible, which is like trying to get that information as soon as I possibly can. Trying to say to you in that moment, do you need a Listerine strip? Offering one to your scene burner and saying, there's going to be a blood. The rig's going to go on you like this. This is the person that's going to put that on you. If you feel uncomfortable, if you feel unsafe, mm-hmm. you can tell me that. Mm-hmm. And then I can, you know, disseminate that information.
Get the I can just like strapped in a rig before, like pumping blood. And I was like, wah, you know, like just even have somebody say, okay, this is going to happen now. Like, you good?
Yes.
You know, game change. Smallest thing, game change.
It's making me think, in college, I went to school for a theater and musical theater. Actually, Corinne and I have a mutual friend, and that's how I met her. Shout out to Kate Bone. But I was a virgin, and I was just, like, very inexperienced overall. This is, like, maybe my sophomore year of college. And I was so uncomfortable in my body. And I think my teacher recognized that and gave me this like very sexy scene from Beirut to do. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, in a setting like that, you're not working with a director. You're working with your classmate outside of class hours. And then you're putting the scene on its feet in front of the class.
Nightmare.
And the teacher's acting as director and giving you notes on your performance, blah, blah, blah. And I remember just feeling so deeply uncomfortable because I was trying, I knew that I needed to get comfortable to be able to actually act
mm-hmm.
and like be in the scene. And in that case, granted, no shade to this guy. We were like 18 years old and trying to navigate learning how to do this. But he didn't make me feel more comfortable. Yeah. Like, we were both awkward. And I think about that in retrospect and how nice it would have been if I had the language to be like, okay, like, we have to do this bedroom scene. How do you feel if I like touch your face or whatever? And it's obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but you don't have an intimacy coordinator in this classroom setting. And so being able to do that for myself or for the other person, or knowing that it was like okay to talk about that, would have been really nice.
I think that's huge. Like, understanding now more than ever that we can speak up about stuff, but how you do it in the right way, like how you get it to the right people.
This is related, I swear. Yesterday I had like a big talk, big feelings talk with my partner, right? Mm-hmm. And we got to a point where he was like, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying this, but where he was like, I'm just trying to do it right. And I was like, you know, I think trying to do it right is almost the worst pressure we can put on ourselves in a certain way, because it's like, what is that? If we look back at when you were 18 doing that scene, you were doing it right because you were doing the best that you had in that moment with the tools that you had. And it's like, okay, can we just like come at these conversations where we're at and not put that pressure on ourselves to like have it right or not make a mistake, because mistakes are going to happen. We're human beings. This is how we grow and evolve. And I think it can be really scary in our culture right now, because there's such a spotlight on everyone. If you do make a mistake, like, someone's gonna call you out, someone's gonna say that, which is great, like, we want to have accountability, right? But like, it's just really scary, I think, yeah, for people to feel like, oh, I need to do it right. And I feel that with actors when I'm working in these scenes, mm-hmm, and they were like, really don't want to make the other person uncomfortable, like, they really don't want to. And that's what I hear more than anything, is people will be like, I want them to like feel safe. And yeah, my experience largely with most actors is they just want their scene partner to feel safe and, like you guys were saying, do their best work. And like, mm-hmm, and I think with coordinating, like, I'm just trying to get those parameters so that they're not, exactly like you guys said, worried about like, how do I bring this up? How do, mm-hmm, I like,
yeah,
say this?
Well, another thing that, if you're not an actor, you might not know this, or if you haven't ever, you know, been on set, but I remember learning before I had ever been on the set that it, like, when you kiss someone, don't use tongue.
Right. The unspoken no tongue.
But I'm assuming, maybe wrongly, that if you talk and like it's a very hot and heavy erotic scene and they are okay with tongue, then that, yeah, is okay. Yeah.
Like, I mean, we'll hang it out. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Every kiss, there's a quality. There's a different type of kiss that's happening. There's a different frame that's happening. You can't really see the tongue, to be honest.
Have you guys been challengers? Wait till you do.
Once it's in the mouth is when you can't see it. So the best time to see the tongue is when you're going in, yeah, for the kiss. It's like in the cresting.
Right.
You know, when you're... That's where you
interest, which is such a, yeah, funny thing too, because then it's like, then you're thinking so technically about like the choreography of the tongue, and even though this might not feel natural, it looks good on camera, and it's, yeah, just like, it's just such a funny clinical thing that, yeah, to an outsider seems like so sexy, and it's just like simply not. It's,
yeah, and choreography, every actor is different with like a level of choreography, right? And I always say we're gonna go to the person whose boundaries, you know, wherever that furthest boundary is, like, that's our baseline, right? Mm-hmm. So if someone's like, no, I need most beats choreographed, cool, we're going to do that. If actors, sometimes actors say exactly what you're saying, like, how do we make it like a little less stiff? In that scenario, if everyone's good with it, then we're going to, I like to just create goalposts of shapes of like, we're hitting this shape, then we're hitting this shape, then we're hitting this shape. And in between, we know we've gone through the boundaries. Are we okay with tongue? Are we not? Are, mm-hmm, we? How are we using tongue? How are we using these different types of touch? And once we have those conversations, then those in-between moments might be quote-unquote improvised, but they're not improvised. It's like within a toolbox of tools that we've talked about, mm-hmm, using. Mm-hmm. But then there's some actors that might want to get really every beat, or directors that want to get like every little beat in there. So we're just going to work within...
Yeah.
Whatever is going to, yeah, see in the best.
Yeah, it's just so much being like comfortable in yourself and being malleable enough to make everybody else feel comfortable.
What I strive for is like having as regulated of a nervous system as I possibly can. Because as you guys know, like the on-set environment, like it is not a nervous system regulator. Like you're really like not well. Yeah. You're just like not well for days on end, especially like the difference between horror shoots and the other stuff is like a lot of it happens at night, right? Oh, so God, we're just like, so really not right, well.
You're, yeah, having a days in a row overnight shoots. People are tired.
Yeah. And you're like, wait, what were we doing here? Yeah, or like I travel a lot for work. I try to get, mm-hmm, into the other country like a week before we're shooting. I'm like not okay if I don't have my sleep. I sleep. So I try to just go for being as regulated, because shit's gonna happen, like things are gonna happen, people are gonna feel some kind of way at any given moment, something could happen. And so, like I said, I just try to focus on mitigating risk and then having a strategy for if something does come up.
Yeah.
I just try to make sure actors know, like, hey, if you say this word to me, or if we have a signal, or if you just say to me, I need like a break, then I'm going to tell the team we're taking a break, and you can then tell me what you need. So I just try to like make sure they know what's going to happen if they need a moment, and make sure everyone knows that, so we're like all on the same page. And then, yeah, it's different every movie, every actor, every director.
Yeah. So sometimes in the script, it'll be really descriptive. Like, my friend was a guest star on a show that had very explicit sex scenes where like the sex scene itself would be, and when I'm saying sex, I'm talking about like every kind of intimate act was very detailed and described on the page. Mm-hmm. Whereas in other projects, I've seen like, and they fall into bed, and you know, and then there's no real description of what is happening. Do you think there's like, from your conversations with actors and directors, do you think that it helps at all to be descriptive on the page ahead of time, or does it not really matter?
I think the only time it would matter is like in casting, you yeah. know, like obviously. I say obviously, I shouldn't say that, because nothing is obvious to anyone in this industry, right? So,
yeah.
Casting is supposed to notify people of intimate acts and levels of nudity required. So it's helpful in that regard, because yeah. like they fall into bed.
Could mean so many different things.
They fall into bed, I feel we would interpret as no nudity, no intimate activity most of the time, but you never know. The director could come in and be like, and then we do this and this and this is it. So it's helpful as yeah. early. I just think as early as people can have information,
mm-hmm.
great. But also writers, as you probably know, Vika, like if it's not a writer's room in TV, like let's say it's a feature, that's the director's medium, quote unquote, you know, historically. So it's like, okay, well, maybe the writer's trying to be respectful of like, the director's vision. It'd be like, mm-hmm. I'm leaving space for the director yeah. and the cast to bring what they want. So I think it's a creative job. I think just as soon as people know that someone's gonna be on screen portrayed as nude, whether it's actual nudity or implied nudity, and if they're gonna have some kind of intimate act, like as soon as people know, convey it would be my thought, my suggestion.
Like it's like similar just to writing action in general, any type of action.
It's very true.
Right? It's yeah. like if you know the jargon for it, like write it. But if you don't, like leave it to the profesh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe yeah. they don't know. Maybe that writer mm-hmm. doesn't know and is just like, I don't know.
Or maybe
yeah.
or maybe like they something are, hot, figure yeah. it out.
Maybe the writer has a boundary. Maybe the writer yeah. is like, yeah. you know what? That kind of writing I'm not comfortable doing it, so I'm gonna just mm-hmm. let someone else. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. I've worked with directors that are uncomfortable with intimacy scenes in general, and then convey that to me and are just like, you know, these types of scenes I feel a little weird, I would love it if you could just do all of the talking to the cast. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
I can help, you know, without violating like
DGA rules
but like yeah, trying to like do more of the technical talking, like translating right. as you would with stunts, with like technical
yeah.
giving them more technical language yeah. so the director doesn't have to be like, oh, I want it to look hotter, but how do I make it look hotter?
Right.
Yeah.
What is, it sounds like it was different when you started getting into this work, but now yeah. I feel like what I've heard is that there's like two major schools and you kind of mm. need to be certified to get a job. Is that the case?
No. Not at all. So anyone who is certified in this, and there's no zero shade, zero issues with this, it's just not the path that I chose. So anyone that is certified has essentially certified themselves, and that's great. There's no board that is overseeing this. There's mm-hmm. no state mm-hmm. certification. There's no board. There's no SAG. There's what? No one is regulating what does it mean to be quote unquote certified. So this is like it's like getting certified as a dominatrix, like another dominatrix, which is a thing.
Yeah.
Another mm-hmm. dominatrix is just certifying you, right? Yeah. So this is like people that are really smart, really good at their jobs, that have made amazing companies that are training people, and those people certified themselves and now are certifying other people, which is fine. That's fine. You can absolutely go that route. You do not need to be certified to do this work, because there is no like board that is overseeing that. SAG is not overseeing that. What I think certification helps people do is distill, like you would with like academia and a degree, you're distilling your learning experience down into something that's digestible for an employer. It's just, you've completed these courses. What SAG has now, they do have a registry that has coordinators that they have basically looked over our training and decided to put us on this list. And I don't think that list means anything either, because you're not required to hire from that list, right? So you're still...
It's very unregulated. It's a wild, wild left.
It really is.
What is regulated in our industry?
For sure.
Like, who's certifying a director? Who's certifying a writer? Like, nothing in our industry is certified.
Yeah,
like,
we've basically decided for a lot of these jobs that you've done X amount of hours, and now you can qualify to... Which is not a bad method. You know, you do X amount of hours, and you do 400 hours in another state, you can be an AD. Mm-hmm. You know, and with a director, similarly. But
those are unions. Those are like,
exactly.
Right.
We didn't have an intimacy coordinator.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too. Yes, for sure. Oh, and I feel like when it comes to like safety and intimacy, and like that bleeds into mental health, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it's all.
It does. And it's like, that's the trouble I have with this role is that we are starting to bleed it into mental health. Yeah. We are not therapists.
Right.
No. We are choreographers and coordinators. Right. That is what we are doing. And I think the trouble is now we're trying to put, like you could say stunts is mental health then too, because it's still people getting cranked around and getting their heads bashed against each other. And, you know, God knows
what. There just like needs to be a mental health professional on set and an intimacy coordinator on set.
There's mental health coordinators now that are, their focus. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's like a bunch of people, like offshoots of like people that are intimacy professionals that are also mental health coordinator, I think is maybe what saying it's called. But yeah, I think like it's the Wild West, like everything else in the film industry. It's a very new field. I think we're, as the role evolves, starting to figure out what works best. Mm-hmm. For that role. But no, you don't have to be certified to do the work. You can choose to be. SAG has this list, but you don't have to hire from that list. It's just like, here's people that I'm on that list, but I think I would be working whether I was on that list or not, because I don't think I've ever gotten work from being on that list, but just from people knowing me.
How do you get hired? Like, are there job listings? Is it like, again, wild, wild west?
It's like anything else in the business. Yeah. It's like, who do you know? Yeah. And like, more importantly, who knows you and who do you work with? Cause like, not, you could have trained with a certain organization. You could have trained, you know, been an experiential person that is then now like creating your own method, but are you right for like the job?
Yeah.
And that could be anything from the content. Like, I am in the kink community and have been for many years. So like anything that includes kink, I'm like, great. I would love to like consult on that, be a part of that, create choreography for that. I might be better suited for that than someone that's like had zero experience in kink. Or maybe you have somebody that's their culture that they come from and they understand intimacy in like a certain culture, and that person might be better suited for a job. So often it's just like a network of us knowing each other, intimacy professionals, knowing each other, recommending each other for jobs. And then ADs or UPMs or directors that know me, they just pass my name along to other people. I also think temperament, like any other position, you're like interviewing with that person to see if you're an energetic match for the work.
Yeah Is there like an interview part of that?
Yes and no. I laugh because we joke about this a lot. Like, sometimes I was talking to another coordinator friend of mine, and we were laughing about how sometimes we think we're going in for an interview and
then
I'm
you
like,
just have the job.
Yeah, that happens a lot. And like, I always prep the script before I interview, because I've had this happen enough times where like I think I'm interviewing and then I'm sitting there and then suddenly they're like, yeah, so for scene 14, we're going to have this. And like, can you just, and I'm like, okay, so we're, okay. I'm not going to question
it. I have the job.
I'm not going to question it.
Sick, sick, sick.
Not questioning ours.
So far, I can tell. Microphone. Because I know that experience. Like, my last studio job, I went there to interview, and I walked into the executive's office, and he was like, are you starting now? And I was like, hi, nice to meet you. Like, what?
Yes. Actually,
yeah. So, like, I don't know. It's like anything else. Somebody knows you when they recommend you for a thing, and then you interview, and suddenly you're prepping.
So it sounds like if you're listening and you're interested in this work, that there are a lot of places you can go online, and like schools or workshopy type places.
Yeah, you could do if you wanted to. Jesus, back this up.
I call it Jesus.
My Lord and Savior. I'm not Christian, but I was raised Christian. Okay. And now I have sort of like an erotic idea of Jesus. And it's like, it gets very sexy. It's like Benedetta. It's like, I'm like being crazed. So what I would suggest for somebody that wants to get into it, and that, especially somebody that like isn't quite sure, I think you could find any number of workshops online through, I mean, I'm just going to throw out Theatrical Intimacy Education and Open Intimacy Creatives, because I know those immediately. There's plenty of other places that you could go and take from. Those are coming to mind because I know Chelsea. And they have an intro course on TIE that's like intimacy coordination, and you could take that. And I think plenty of other courses have these as well, where you can like just take a multi-hour course that's giving you sort of an overview of like, this is what it's like to do the job. This is like the intricacies of the work, and then you can kind of find out if it's for you, because I've also known people that have gotten into the field like me, thinking it's going to be this like really fun, sexy, like coming up with the choreography, and then they start getting into like what doing the job is actually like, and then they're like, oh, you know what, it's not what I thought it was. And then the opposite, like I meet some people, a lot of people will reach out to me and be like, can you talk to me about what it's like to do your job, and I try to take as many of those calls as I can. And I'll talk to some people who are like seem very focused on like the legal aspects, and like, and then I'm like, I think you will like this job, because it's a lot of that. It's a lot of like technicalities. Yes, it's choreography, but it has a lot of these other things. So I think it's great to take one of those workshops and just see if you even like the vibe.
And now you can be like, well, I did this podcast episode and you can listen to all of that.
You can say, here's the podcast.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We can list resources when we get to posting as well.
Sure. And I can gather more. There's like also SAG did put out a list of like, I'm going to put this in quotes, like SAG accredited. I don't know what they called it, but like basically companies that chose to submit a shitload of paperwork to SAG. SAG then like went through, I think, and put on the site. So there is like resources on the SAG site, but like I said, I don't think TIE is on there. I don't think Open Intimacy Creatives are on there. There's a bunch of like, you don't need to use ones that are on that. You can
That's
use whatever
great
you want.
To know. Yeah. I think that it's, I've had some friends who were like, oh, I'm really interested in doing that, but when I went to go look at like one of the certification places, it's like you can't get in, or you can't like,
no, you don't,
like wait list and blah blah blah.
You don't need to have gone through one of those programs to do the work. The thing that I don't know for sure if they help with job placement, but obviously knowing other coordinators that are working is gonna help a lot. Most, like hate jobs, because they'll ask you to cover and like I would assume going through a program helps with that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, because I didn't go through them. So.
Well, with this experience being on set and being a writer, director yourself, are there like directors you've observed where you're like, oh, I'm going to take a little bit of that into my own work, and any like examples that come to mind?
Yeah.
Hey, you've gotten to work with such fucking cool directors.
Yeah, I have. I won't name any names, you know, like all the NDAs and shit. We're not allowed to talk about the actual work I do on set, right? But I'll just like blanket statement, no name, drop a few things. Like, yeah, I think I learn a lot from directors that are really good. I learn a lot from directors that I don't think, you know, I think could improve themselves. I think often even more. So like I'll watch like a breakdown that's happening on set, and I glean so much information from that, because I'm like, oh, if the director had just said
XYZ
had to the cast member, they wouldn't be like hemming and hawing and very confused about what's happening right now.
Communication.
I find that most things are communication, but I work with one director that is so calm and thoughtful. And I think that was something that I really took away from working with her, was that she was just so, she took the time with the cast to go over like the scene breakdown. She was efficient on set, but she still would take that time to be like, this is where we're at emotionally before she would even go into blocking. And I always thought that was awesome because so many directors will immediately go into blocking, assume that all the cast are on the same page about scene arc and like the setup, switch and arrow of the scene, like what's happening. And watching her be like, so this is where we're at emotionally. This is what's going on. And now we're going to block in the rehearsal, which I thought that was really cool. And then I worked with another director also that had a similar style of being like, just giving the cast more information, which doesn't always help. Yeah, sometimes it could hinder. But with this particular cast, it did help a lot of like being like, this is the exact coverage that's going to happen. This is where camera's going to be. This is where you're at. This is what's happening. This is who's going to be in the room. I find that like the directors that take the time to give the cast like a little more information, especially around the scenes that I'm involved in, which generally people are a little more hyped up around like the intimacy stuff. If people can just have a little more information, which I think for some directors can be scary because maybe these scenes are making them feel a little tense too, which is so understandable. I really have learned a lot from those directors that are like, have their shit ready, are giving the actors that information, and are also like ultra prepared with like their plan and their shot list and like what they want to do, but then also can pivot when they have to
running out of time or whatever. What you said earlier really rang true to me, and I'm sure to you as well, Carly, is the idea that you want to be good at reading people. And sometimes the job of a director is to know, is this somebody who's going to get overwhelmed if I give them all of this information where it's going to hinder them? Or is that someone where if I tell them like, oh, camera's going to move from this point to this point, you're only going to see this part, then they're like, okay, great. Then I can work with that. And I know I don't need to worry about all these other things. I can just focus on this moment or whatever. So sometimes, like, you might get that wrong, I guess, but nice to have that kind of understanding with that.
Well, and I feel like we're growing a sort of new generation of filmmakers in all the different jobs that are more communicative. You know, it's less just, like, behind the camera people becoming directors and not speaking to actors. You know, it's, like, it's so much less sectioned off. Everybody's more multi-hyphenate. So, I think it's our responsibility to, as we come up all together, to make sure we encourage that communication, because it saves money. Like, it'll get stuff done faster.
Communication, I think, is the crux of, like, you know, for lack of a better term, world peace, right? Like, if we could just all read, I mean, this book is like so controversial because I feel like a bunch of people don't like it for various reasons that are valid, but I just like want to like microdose everyone on like nonviolent communication, because like that book and the methodology in that book, Stripped Back, which there's sure people have issues with it, but just being able to like convey things to people and then also accept what they're conveying to you and get comfortable like stating your boundaries, because even like what you're saying, reading people or trying to like assume is so hard to do.
That's very true, and I don't think it's smart to assume you understand someone without having like asking questions.
But lots of people need to be read, to your point, because lots of people are not comfortable expressing
themselves
and don't even know how to.
Nobody is. You know what I mean? Like, nobody is comfortable with that. Like, in their own varying degrees of it. You know?
I was raised by people that were too comfortable.
Same. My parents are both psychologists. I also am like, why didn't you talk to me about it? Like, it's so easy.
This is me. I went out in the world. It took me until about 28 to realize that there was social cues. Like, I was operating in the world like people mend what the fuck they said to me.
Oh.
And I really thought that. And in LA, even fucking worse. Like, I was like, this person likes me. Oh, God. You know? Yeah. And I just, like, I believed it because my family was so, they're going to tell you exactly.
Yeah, and direct.
What the fuck.
Direct and genuine. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think, honestly, I think it's a lovely way to move through the world. Although I do think you probably end up getting hurt more than...
As somebody who's
pros and cons for sure.
I'm glad I figured out social cues, and also now I don't have to exhaust myself trying to be authentic all the time. Like, now I'm like, cool, this is an environment that I don't need to be authentic.
Yes.
This is an environment that is not prepared for all of that.
Yes.
Yep. So I love it. Before we started recording, you told us a little bit about your podcast. And
yes.
TBD.
Yeah. To be unveiled.
But I think that also from what I've seen of your directing and writing work, it feels connected, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
So what kind of stories are you most interested in telling when you are the one at the helm?
So all of my work, I talk about falling into the Venn diagram of shadow integration, death.
And sorry, can you explain shadow integration
Absolutely.
For someone who might not know?
Absolutely. So shadow integration, shadow work is the process, it's a Jungian concept of taking the unconscious and making it conscious. Mm-hmm. And so that's at the basic overview. But in my, what I'm focused on with shadow integration, shadow work is taking aspects of myself that I've shunned or that I think are bad and
air quotes
and bringing them, giving them a space, giving them a space to live and integrating them into my conscious so that they're not ruling the way that I behave. And I think as artists, this is kind of what we're doing, whether we're conscious of it or not. But my stories that I write and direct often center on characters who have something about them that is air quotes bad, that is getting exercised through the film, and then they're coming into terms with it for better or for worse. A lot of my work is like horror, so it's like on the surface it's bad, but quote unquote, but to me as an artist it's an integration story. So it's like shadow integration, death, sexuality, and the supernatural.
Yo, I feel like we really are on the same page.
And
like,
you guys
just became best friends.
Yes. We need to do just a full swap of like everything you've ever done.
Let's go.
But also like my parents. I wish my parents were here too, because they would be like, yes, they're always giving me like out of left field psychology books to like just read and think about like what you can create from that. Or like, have you read this book, Existential King?
Of course.
Yeah, I feel like that's exactly that shadow work.
Oh, I love
it. It's so interesting. Yeah.
Okay, Existential Kink for the listeners. I don't know if you guys remember the author or anything, but that's...
Yeah, Caroline Elliott.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fascinating. It's like about, you know, taking your existential issues, worries, fears, things you hate about yourself, etc., and making it, like, what if you got, like, obsessed with it? Like, what if you made it a kink? Like, what would happen if you totally flipped the script?
Oh, that's fascinating.
And dug into it?
Well, it's like she makes the comparison between kink and like quote unquote negative patterns in our life. So it's like in a kink space, in kink sexuality, we're doing something that we wouldn't generally want like to happen to us in another circumstance. So like we don't want somebody to like come up and slap us in the face on the street or like tie us down and actually kidnap us or whatever.
Right.
But in the bedroom space and in a consent negotiated space, like that can be very hot and like really do something for you. And so her concept is that when we have a negative pattern, and this isn't like a one-off abuse situation or a pattern of like someone abusing you, when you have a pattern, a negative pattern happening in your life, you on some unconscious level may perhaps enjoy that.
Oh, wow, and that's so interesting.
The book is about ways to like let yourself start enjoying that so your subconscious isn't communicating through self-sabotage. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, like bad, bad, yeah. Bad.
Wow. Does it talk about, like, intrusive thoughts and things like that?
I don't know.
I think it, like, alludes to, like, you can take this into anything. Like, even just, like, in general, like, anxiety. And then, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it can land into whatever.
She has, like, exercises and meditations that you can do. So you can create sort of a safe space to explore that. Because obviously when you have a negative pattern, you have something that's really triggering in your life, you don't want to just, like, start loving it all day, every day.
Exposing yourself to a degree that feels not good.
Yeah, be like a smart way. to start looking at it.
Yeah, it's creating these like little containers where you can dip your toe into being like, what if I just imagine that I like this and make it sexy?
Oh, well, we didn't really talk about your podcast. Oh, yeah.
Well, the podcast is hopefully, if as long as I can get everything set up, will be called The Ache with Karen. And it'll be conversations like what we just started talking about shadow integration and art and eroticism and sort of the underbelly of our own psyches. And as artists, like how we take that and put it into
The
world.
Is there like a film or a TV show that you think sort of aligns with your sensibility?
Oh my God. I mean, like, I think...
That you wish you made, I guess.
I guess there's nothing that I wish I made, because if I made it, then it wouldn't be what it is, right? But there's like a few movies that I love. Like, I love Gaspar Noé, obviously, like if that's not glaringly obvious. All of his work has like deep opportunities for shadow integration as a viewer, because you're like going to be confronted with like some shit, and you can be like validated in your pain as a human by watching that. And then there's this movie, And Then We Danced.
Oh, I don't know. And me neither.
Okay. Oh my God, I don't want to say the filmmaker's name wrong, but it's like Levon Aiken.
I'm Googling, listeners.
Dear listeners, we are hold for Google.
It's about Gruzian dance in the country of Gruzia. I think I'm saying it right. Gruzia.
Levon Aiken. I mean, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but
I need to watch this. I'm a dancer also.
It's amazing. It's a lighter. I mean, not everybody's ready for Gaspar, so I don't want to like just plunge everyone down there. But this one, I think, is really beautiful film, like about accepting yourself and exploring like parts of yourself. It's a love story. It's two gay guys in Gruzian dance, and it's still a very homophobic culture, and they're expressing themselves through art, but they're also finding these like dark, scary parts of their eroticism, and it's a beautiful movie.
So this game, non-game, is called No Fucking Way, and we just want like an offhand story, like just whatever comes to your mind first. It can be like a quick industry horror story. It can be your favorite on-set experience.
It's not a horror story, and it's not a like amazing on-set moment, but it's a concept that my writing partner and I have come up with based on things that continue to happen.
Oh.
So we call it Whipsy Whoops. We call it a whipsy.
I love it already.
And here's what happens when you have a whipsy. And I'll give you an example from Toothless, which is the short film that we finished and are now in like festival submissions for. But so on Toothless, we had like a massive whipsy where we like lost one of our main locations, and it was like a major disaster, and we ended up having to like push everything to the next weekend, and like there was like this huge scramble that happened, and obviously we were like freaking out and being like, oh my God. But that thing happening made us change a bunch of day stuff to night stuff that ended up entirely influencing, which I was thrilled about. I'm always trying to shoot at night because I'm always trying to have like really weird lighting. And so we were able to completely reconstruct like the visual tone of the back half of the film because of this, and it's like one of the things that we're complimented on the most in the film.
Cool.
And it's like the best thing ever. We also had a situation with the actors where we had to like recast at the last second, and we started getting into this zone where anytime something goes quote unquote wrong, we start getting really excited, and we're like,
existential king.
We're like, it's a whip. It's gonna be a whip. We're gonna get some shit. Is gonna be even better. So like, also happened on set. We had like a really bad situation. Well, it wasn't anyone's fault, but we like had some stuff happening with the PD going up wrong, and we like had a bunch of things happen that was no one's fault, but it put us like severely behind in our day. Oh. But because of all these whipses that had already happened, we were like in the mindset, and I just got really excited. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to like, I had this short had a bunch of like long takes that were married together by whip, like whip hands and whip tilts. And they had like a certain sequence. So like every long shot went out a certain way and the next one would come in and there would be like a maze of whips that would take us to the next like big long shot. So changing any of those directions was a big deal. So I like really quick just like made a new map of all these things and I got like, instead of getting freaked out, I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, let me be like as creative as I possibly can. And I love what ended up happening. It like made the film so much better. So yeah, she and I talk a lot about just like trusting the film gods in that way of just like, and plus like being a human being, how crazy is life, huh? And like, what are we gonna do
at every moment?
What are we gonna do if we can't whips it? You know, if we think we're in control, we're fucking not. And like, let's make it a whips.
Right. And maybe the art's gonna be better for that chaos that happens. You know what I mean?
It could be worse. But at the end of your life, you're dying, you're careening towards death, and you're accumulating a bunch of interesting information and whipses along the way. And now, I have to credit Lily Coles, who is my creative partner, my writing partner, and she, I think, coined it, but she bought me, I have a bracelet that I'm not wearing today that says whips, and it says a minus, and then it says whipsy, and then it has a plus on the other side. So it's like making your negatives positives.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Sell them. Title of it.
I'll buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Whipsy whips.
Oh my God, I love it.
So wow.
What a great episode.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for hanging with us today.
Thank you for having me. I hope it was.
Oh, it was fantastic. I was thoroughly entertained and educated. Yeah, I also think it's funny that I wore this like Puritan collar on an episode about like that could be anything. It could be anything. But yeah, thank you so much. Where can our listeners find you, follow you, see your work?
Oh, my ad is Corinio, CORRINIEO on Instagram. My website is CorinneEvans.com.
Incredible.
Everything's there.
Gorgeous. Thank you. Thanks for being with us this week, our dear daddy listeners. You can follow us at NYD Films on Instagram and TikTok. And you can follow me at Vika Stubbs. That's STUBBS on Instagram. I don't use anything else. And
you can follow me at the Carly Tamarin. The spelling is all weird. You're going to have to look it up on all the platforms. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Daddy Dailies is presented by Not Your Daddy's Films, a social impact organization dedicated to educating and empowering women and non-binary creatives in TV and film. If you like what you heard today, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a positive review. And if you want more daddy episode insights and links to what we talked about, join us on Patreon.com/NYD Films. Daddy Dailies is produced in partnership with Robert Bailey and edited by Carly Tamarin, Vika Stubblebine, Claudia Restrepo, and Gracie Strauss. See you next time, Daddy.